Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ and the East County Magazine Radio Show. And today I'm here with Supervisor Diane Jacob. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Glad to be here.
Now, a lot of people don't know that San Diego actually has more family farms under 10 acres than any county in America. Farming is a difficult business these days, but Supervisor Jacob has emerged as a leader pushing forward a vision of agritourism to help both our local economy and farmers in our region. Diane, tell us a little bit about why you believe agritourism is a good business for East County in particular.
Well, if you can envision a tourism agriculture industry that promotes tourism is an economic base for property owners. And a lot of property owners in East County, they own large plots of land, and yet, what do they do with it? In the past, there was just a move to divide it up, sell it off, and develop it, and a lot of people have done that. I have a different vision where people can actually make money off their property, and we, as a county government, can create the environment by reducing regulations to make it easier for them to do that. One example is our winery ordinance that we adopted years ago. Now, anyone could grow grapes, make wine, but when it came to wine tasting on their property or retail sales on the property, and we're talking about agricultural zones now.
Right.
We're not talking about residential zones. We're talking about agricultural zones. When they came to that point, it required a major use permit, which is very expensive and very time-consuming. So it was the Ramona Vintners that came to me with an idea of a tiered winery ordinance. So we have what's called now boutique wineries. So if you're producing under 12,000 gallons of wine, that you can open up a tasting room, you can do retail sales on site by right. Now, that does not mean that there are no rules. I mean, you still have to comply with building standards and all the other regulations that are in place.
You don't need that expensive major use permit, which was, what, $60,000, $100,000, a lot of money.
Or upwards, yes. Mm-hmm. Very, very expensive. A lot of people can't afford it. We're talking about small wineries here.
Right. So now, before this ordinance, there were very few wineries or tasting rooms operating in East County. And do you have any figures now on how many we have today, Diane, as a result of the ordinance?
The latest number I have is about 20 tasting rooms have opened up since the winery ordinance was adopted, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yes. And if you count vineyards, there's even more. I believe it's 70 wineries and vineyards operating in Ramona alone now, according to the Ramona Valley Wine Magazine editor, who I just interviewed last week. So it's really a growing business.
It's very exciting, beyond my expectations. And with promoting the growing of grapes, it's opened up ideas for other industries.
Such as?
Equestrians. Mm-hmm. We are horse country in East County.
Yes.
And a lot of people didn't know. And this mostly applies to people lakeside, parts of Ramona, not the real back country of East County. But a lot of folks didn't know that they could own as many horses as they wanted to.
Really?
But if they boarded one horse, it would require a major use permit. Again, and very expensive.
And you're setting out to change that. There's a hearing, I understand, coming up September 11th about a new tiered equine ordinance. Tell us what that's going to do for property owners and horse owners and would-be horse owners across East County.
Again, for people who own horses or want to board horses, it's patterned after the tiered winery ordinance. So if you want to board a few horses, you can do it by right. Won't require an administrative or a major use permit. And then, again, if you're going to get to a large commercial operation, then it would require a more intensive permit and more costs associated with it. But, again, the whole goal here is to promote that equine industry and to make it easier for people by the county reducing regulations. And it's an industry, there's a domino effect. It's not just the horses or riding the horses, but think about Horses need feed. Horses need somebody to put shoes on them. You need saddles. You need blankets. And you need all
so it
corrals.
A variety of jobs centered around the equine business.
Just like the winery business. There's that domino
right, there's
effect.
There's the bottlers and the agricultural workers who pick the grapes and prune the vines. There are quite a few jobs.
That's right. So we're talking about jobs and we're talking about the economy. We're also talking about a very positive use of the land rather than paving things over.
There is a different vision for East County, and that's what the energy and the utility companies have in mind, which is basically to pave over this prime agricultural land, thousands and thousands and thousands of acres at a time, for large-scale industrial wind projects and solar energy projects. Is that something that is harmful to the economy out here, in your opinion, Diane?
Absolutely. And in fact, if you look at the cumulative impact of what's in the process in terms of just these large wind projects, it's devastating. It basically industrializes our backcountry. We're talking about agricultural lands and promoting agriculture by reducing regulations to do that. Thus, promoting agritourism, whether it's wineries or equestrian stables, horse shows, or whether it's microbreweries or cheese making or whatever that is.
Now, is that what's coming up next? Will we be seeing some legislation soon, Diane?
Well, the equine ordinance comes up soon on the 11th, as a matter of fact. And then we have initiated action also in order to take a look at microbrews. San Diego is number one, or if not number one, close to being the microbrew capital. So craft beers, growing hops, craft beers, doing tasting, again, opens up that tourism industry. And then associated with that, too, is our farm stays, where people could rent out up to three rooms and have people actually come stay, see
like
how...
a B&B kind of thing on your farm.
And absolutely. They're called farm stays, or you can have a bed and breakfast. So there's all kinds of opportunities. And you could tie in organic gardening, farmers markets. There's a whole spin-off of activities which promotes healthy living, a good economy, and also outstanding use of the land. It preserves the land.
Yes. Now, I have some interesting figures. The University of California at Davis did a study of the flower fields in Carlsbad, looking at just one successful agritourism business. And what they found was that it attracts 200,000 visitors a year who spend $2.3 million in the city of Carlsbad alone. That's not just at the flower fields. That includes lodging, going out to dinner, all kinds of things. And on top of that, even more money flows into the area because many of them come from quite far away. And they come down here and they visit the zoo and SeaWorld and other things. Is that something that you envision eventually happening out here in East County, sort of an if we build it, they will come?
Oh, absolutely. And it's true. Look at what's happened with the wineries and how actually that industry has exploded since the winery ordinance, beyond my expectations. So there's no limit. The sky is the limit on what we can do promoting agriculture, good use of the land, and also establishing a tourism and an economic base that will help to make East County thrive in a positive way.
Yes, well, it sounds like a very exciting vision, Diane. Now, I should ask, for those who are neighbors of some of these projects, are there protections built into these ordinances for people who might have concerns, as they would with any kind of project or expansion proposed on a neighboring property, with things like traffic or noise or flies, you know, whatever else might be the issue?
Well, with any of these efforts that I mentioned, like with the winery ordinance and then the equestrian ordinance that's coming to the board this Wednesday, that there's a very extensive environmental review process. There's been a lot of public input and a lot of outreach by the staff in terms of getting community input. It's not to say that there aren't going to be people out there that are a little fearful of what might result as we proceed forward. But you know, what's the alternative? And we'll deal with those issues as they come. And people should contact the County Department of Planning or contact my office. I'm always interested in what my constituents have to say about any issues that we're dealing with at the county. And we try to solve the problems as best as we can.
Right.
But like with the equestrian ordinance, there are already a lot of regulations coming down from the state and the federal government on clean water. So keeping the corrals clean and the manure, reducing flies, and I mean, there's already just a whole realm of regulations in place that will protect neighbors in that regard.
Well, and the other thing about agriculture, as opposed to stripping bare the land for these energy projects, is the agriculture actually helps sequester carbon. The plants help absorb or not produce greenhouse gases. And when you strip all of that bare, then you're actually sometimes contributing to adding more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. So agriculture seems like it's healthy for the planet as well as for our economy and certainly for the local farmers looking to have a sustainable business.
Absolutely, Miriam. And it all adds to our quality of life. When you look at what treasures we have here in East County, we have historic Highway 8, we have historic 94, and you can just envision people driving out, stopping at a winery, doing some wine tasting, or going for a horseback ride. There are even horseback winery tours now. So you'll see industries like that popping up. There's even a business that is providing other kinds of tours of our backcountry area. Mm-hmm. My goodness, we have it all in East County, and it's a very exciting time.
We certainly do. On that note, I'm going to end here. Our time is up. But Diane, thank you so much for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Miriam, thank you so much for having me.
With temperatures expected to reach 120 degrees in San Diego County deserts and over 100 in local mountains, county health officials are reminding the public to take precautions to avoid heat stroke and other heat-related illnesses. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county public health officer, says that even short periods of exposure to high temperatures can cause serious health problems. Doing work or physical activity outside on a hot day, spending too much time in the sun, or staying too long in an overheated place can cause heat-related illnesses, including heat stroke, exhaustion, and cramps, she said. To avoid heat-related problems, health officials recommend these steps. Stay in an air-conditioned area during the hottest hours of the day if you can. Wear light, loose-fitting clothing. Drink plenty of water and avoid alcohol and sugary drinks. Don't wait until you're thirsty to take in water or other liquids. Take cool showers to cool off. Never leave a child, elderly person, or pet unattended in a car. The inside of a car heats up quickly, acting like an oven. An infant can die in as little as 15 minutes, even on a mild 75-degree day. Avoid unnecessary hard work or activities outside during the heat of the day. Avoid unnecessary sun exposure and wear a wide-brim hat if you have to be in the sun. Avoid using your oven to cook and heat up your kitchen. Know the signs of heat stroke or exhaustion. An extremely high body temperature of 103 degrees or more. Dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache. If someone around you shows these signs, call 911 and begin cooling the individual off by moving them to a shaded area, spraying with cool water and fanning them, placing them in a cool shower if they're alert, and monitoring the body temperature. Elderly people, 65 and older, infants and children, and people with chronic medical conditions are more prone to heat stress. People with elderly neighbors should check on their well-being during extreme heat. People who do not have air conditioning in their homes can go to a public place, such as a shopping mall, library, or senior center, called a cool zone. Even a few hours spent in air conditioning can help your body stay cooler. Do not rely on electric fans for cooling if the temperatures are more than 90 degrees. The county operates a cool zones program and has designated more than 100 air-conditioned places as cooling centers. The sites are identified with a light blue polar bear cool zone logo. For a list of cool zones near you, call 211 San Diego or visit coolzones.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ. I'm back with Supervisor Diane Jacob. Now, this episode was supposed to air on Friday, but since lightning knocked our transmitter off the air, we are rebroadcasting it on today's show. Supervisor Jacob is going to give us a heads up about a very important matter that's going to be on the agenda next Wednesday, September 11th, a renewable energy work plan that the county will be considering. Tell us what that's about, Diane, and why listeners may want to come down there and learn more.
I initiated this because San Diego County has the ability to be the renewable energy capital and a leader in our region in terms of renewable energy. So what the county staff is coming back with this Wednesday, the 11th, is a work plan. And the work plan will include many, many options from rooftop solar to community choice aggregation, comparing that to the costs of large solar, large wind projects, looking and having an eye on what is in the best interest of the consumer, not the utility company.
Things like the impacts on property values of these big energy projects or the impact on tourism, for example, in communities that have these large projects coming in would be things that would be considered by the county?
There's a cost analysis that will be done as a result of this.
Interesting.
And my goal is for people to become energy independent. And rooftop solar is one way to do that. Community choice aggregation would give people a choice as to where they could buy their electricity. Mm-hmm. Now there's only one choice.
And that choice is SDG&E. Well, it sounds like a very important meeting. And listeners, if you want to attend and have your voice heard, the public will be able to speak at this, of course.
Absolutely.
The meeting will be next Wednesday.
The meeting starts at 9 o'clock.
Very good. And that's at the County Administration Building downtown. You can find details on our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Thank you, Diane, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. It's the 24th annual Saquon Powwow this weekend, starting Friday, September 13th, and continuing all weekend through Sunday, September 15th in El Cajon. The Saquon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation hosts this cultural event, which includes competitions for all ages in categories such as gourd dancing, bird singing and bird dancing, drum and singing, hand drum, peon games, and chicken dance. There will be a flag ceremony, as well as food and arts and crafts vendors. Originally, a powwow, or celebration, was held in the spring to welcome the beginnings of life. It was a time for people to get together, sing, dance, renew old friendships, and make new ones, and a time for young people to meet and court. At that time, families could hold naming and honoring ceremonies. The Saquon Powwow begins at dusk on Friday evening at 7 p.m., and then at 1 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Also at Saquon, earlier in the week, is their concert series called Liven Up Close at Saquon. On Tuesday, September 10th at 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m., Broadway star and Tony winner Leah Salonga will perform in this intimate venue at Saquon in El Cajon. The Lemon Grove Historical Society hosts its Hawaiian Luau on Saturday, September 14th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. This event will be held under the stars and twinkling lights of the gazebo courtyard at the historical H. Lee House in Lemon Grove. The festivities will include island music, feasting, hula dancing, and the dramatic spectacle of the Polynesian Fire Dance. Also on Saturday, September 14th, there will be a wine and cheese friend raiser in Alpine from 6 to 9 p.m. The Alpine community and the Backcountry Land Trust invite guests to an evening at Wright's Field Preserve. Celebrating this beautiful open space preserve in the heart of Alpine, the event benefits land conservation, watershed stewardship, and environmental education in East County. There will be live old-time country music by the Podunk Poets, hors d'oeuvres, fruit and dessert plates, and a hosted bar will be available. As an added feature, if you like, you can hike to the event in 5 minutes after parking at the John McQueen Middle School on Tavern Road. Also in Alpine, the Sage and Songbirds 3rd Annual Festival will be held Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Alpine Creek Town Center. The event celebrates Alpine's designation as America's first community wildlife habitat by the National Wildlife Federation. Free events and activities include crafts for kids, butterfly education, live birds of prey, live hummingbirds, snakes, reptiles, bugs, and other critters, arts and crafts vendors, a garden mart and plant sale, and live entertainment. There will be a butterfly release at 2 p.m. On Tuesday, September 10th, Acumba Hot Springs welcomes a giant 20-foot-high striking rattlesnake sculpture by artist and designer Ricardo Bracetta at the Community Park on Old Highway 80. The sculpture is constructed of welded metal and weighs over 800 pounds. The artist will be on site for the September 10th installation, and the community plans fun activities to celebrate the event. Bracetta will be selling signed copies of his art book, an autobiography entitled The Accidental Artist. He will also display and offer some of his smaller sculptures for sale. Another of his giant sculptures is a magnificent 6-foot dragon that graces the front of the newly renovated Chinese Castle on nearby Hill Street. The town of Acumba Hot Springs is gearing up for its centennial celebration, planned for next year in 2014. Four major festivals are planned for the centennial: a third annual blues festival May 3rd, a Healing Waters and Arts Festival the weekend of May 24th, a centennial fall festival on October 4th, and a Christmas festival December 6th. More details on these festivals will be announced at a later date. Every Tuesday at Hacienda Casablanca in El Cajon for Taco Tuesdays, Michael J. Dwyer will be performing hits from the 60s through the 80s, acoustic rock, folk, and Americana covers, as well as his originals. Shelby and Teague perform on Saturday, September 14th at 2 p.m. at the Poway branch of the San Diego County Library System. The performers are a singing, songwriting folk duo reminiscent of Simon and Garfunkel. The fall series of the San Diego County Library Acoustic Showcase offers a variety of San Diego's best singer-songwriters, folk music performers, and storytellers. The concerts are free to the community. An upcoming event to preview takes place at Mission Trails Regional Park on Saturday evening, October 5th. This event is the second annual Mission Trail Regional Park Foundation's Art in the Park and does require tickets. Featured art from over 45 award-winning artists will be on display and for sale, with over 100 pieces of nature-related art in a variety of painting styles, ceramics, photography, and sculpture. CBS 8 meteorologist and lifestyle reporter Sean Stiles and Mission Publishing Group's publisher Jim Madaffer return as honorary co-chairs for this event in the Visitor Center from 6 to 9 p.m. There will be a silent and a live auction ready for your bidding. This is an evening of fine art, fine wine, fine cheese, and fine chocolate. Entertainment will be provided by the members of the San Diego Native American Flute Circle, followed by the Caprice Strings Trio. The San Diego Astronomy Association will have telescopes on the terrace for viewing the stars. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
See you around, East County!
On the heels of a hefty rate increase that took effect September 1st, SDG&E wants ratepayers to pay for costs of decommissioning the San Onofre nuclear generating stations. But ratepayer advocates say the ratepayers should receive refunds for charges assessed when the nuclear reactors were offline for more than a year before being shut down permanently. They want shareholders, not ratepayers, to foot the bill for mistakes made by SDG&E. Public documents obtained by Senator Barbara Boxer suggest that SDG&E and Southern California Edison knew about the faulty pipes that led to leakage, but concealed details from regulators. The California Public Utilities Commission will hold two hearings on this matter on Tuesday, October 1st at 2 p.m. and again at 6:30 p.m. Both will be held at the All Bar Shriners Auditorium, 5440 Kearny Mesa Road, San Diego, 92111. The commission will consider whether or not ratepayers should be charged for the decommissioning costs, as well as whether ratepayers should receive refunds for charges assessed while the nuclear facilities were online for more than a year before the shutdown decision. This has been Leon Thompson for KNSJ Radio and East County Magazine.
How do you spell- spell corporate greed?
S-D-G-N-E.
How do you spell corporate greed?
S-D-G-N-E.
A few dozen members of a local environmental S-D-G-N-E. Activist group and workers for a local solar panel installation company gathered in front of the San Diego headquarters of Semper Energy late last week. They were protesting a California assembly bill which they say will gut incentives for energy conservation and rooftop solar development. The bill, AB 327, was introduced by Fresno Democratic Assemblyman Henry T. Perea. It was approved Friday by the Senate Energy Committee. Its next stop will be the California State Senate, and if it is approved, will be sent on to Governor Brown for his signature. San Diego homeowner Nathan Myers hopes the bill is defeated in its present form.
But the system's under attack right now. The changes proposed by AB 327 to net energy metering threaten the foundation of rooftop solar. For me, it turns my solar investment from one that should pay back before I retire into an expensive loss. It breaks a promise made to me and to the 15,000 other Californians who've made this investment, and it will certainly discourage anyone else from making this decision.
Key provisions of the bill would change the pricing structure put into place during the 2000 and 2001 energy crisis, shift greater authority to the California Public Utilities Commission on rate setting, impose a $10 a month surcharge on all electric customers to cover maintenance of California's electric grid, include current and future rooftop solar customers who have cut their energy bills to also pay the surcharge. Daniel Sullivan, president and CEO of Sullivan Solar Power, says the bill could gut and turn back the progress which has been made in consumers embracing rooftop solar energy systems.
We're all here for different reasons. Whether you're a solar homeowner, whether you are someone from modest means and can't afford increased fixed fees, whether you're a solar employee in the industry and your livelihood depends on this industry, no matter what, this bill is going to impact you in a negative fashion one way or another, and that's why we're all here united today. And let's not forget the most important thing. We're here because our energy policy is intended to reduce the impacts of climate change. We can't be stuck on talking points from the utility about rates when there's so much more at stake.
In spite of opposition by the Sierra Club and local solar panel installers to the proposed new law, AB 327 has been endorsed by SDG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, American Association of Retired People, the Utility Reform Network, and the U.S. Green Network. Longtime Republican San Diego Board of Supervisors member Diane Jacob, an ardent critic of SDG&E, says that she is always skeptical of SDG&E's hidden profit motives towards its customers.
This bill would be very damaging to rooftop solar programs, conservation of energy. It basically is a step back in time and reverses the legislation that was put in place many years ago to help promote sustainability, help promote being energy independent, having rooftop solar on your home. It undoes it all.
Final action on the bill is expected this fall. In downtown San Diego, I'm Paul Cruz, East County Magazine.
If you get lost or hurt on local trails or in other outdoor activities, you can now be charged for the cost of rescue services, up to $12,000 under a new county ordinance. Fees would only apply, though, to hikers who are violating federal, state, or local laws, such as drinking, diving, or hiking in areas where such activities are prohibited. Those found breaking a law can also be cited for a criminal offense. Permits are now required at Cedar Creek Falls and may be obtained through the U.S. Forest Service. Every year, dozens of people are lost or injured in San Diego County's vast backcountry. Ill-equipped or even reckless hikers and rock climbers put a strain on the Sheriff's Department resources and budget. When deputies and the Astrea helicopter are tied up in a search and rescue call, they're not able to respond to other emergencies. Here are some tips to stay safe and avoid the need for rescue services. Tell somebody if you're going to be hiking or caving, where you will be, and when you expect to return. If something goes wrong and you don't come back on time, your contact will know where to begin the search. Never go caving or hiking alone. Know your limits. Choose trails that match your level of physical fitness and stick to marked trails to avoid getting lost. Bring plenty of food and water, sunscreen, a flashlight, a map, first aid kit, a multipurpose tool or knife, and a whistle. Water is especially important, since many rescues are due to hikers getting dehydrated and suffering heat exhaustion. Carry a cell phone with GPS to help rescuers find you. Test it periodically while hiking to learn where you can get a signal. Wear proper clothing, such as sturdy boots for hiking. Never fire off a signal flare, since it was a lost hunter's flare that started the deadly cedar fire. Finally, if you do have an emergency, don't wait to call 911. The longer you wait, the more difficult the rescue becomes. For KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The Chula Vista Police Department seeks public help to locate two 12-year-old boys who have been missing since Friday, September 6th. Jermaine Navarro and Samuel Saunders experienced difficulty at Rancho Del Rey Middle School on Friday and both failed to return home that night, say police. They are believed to be together and are considered runaways, most likely. They may be staying with friends who aren't even aware of their reported runaway status, but they are considered at risk because of their very young age. If you have any information on the boys, please call the Chula Vista Police Dispatch Center at 619-691-5151. Jermaine Navarro is Hispanic, 12 years old, 5'4", 120 pounds. He has black hair and brown eyes. He could be wearing a black shirt, white shorts, and a black and red hat with the word Levi's on it. His friend, Samuel Saunders, was 12 years old when he disappeared and turned 13 on September 9th. He is 4'11" tall and weighs 75 pounds. He has brown hair and brown eyes. He could be wearing a white shirt with blue stripes, white shorts, and red Air Jordan shoes. Again, if you have any information on the boys, please call 619-691-5151.
This is a crime beat report from East County Magazine and KNSJ. The Sequan tribe is offering a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of whoever killed Zusha Brown, Jr. The 22-year-old man was a passenger in a vehicle on Interstate 8 in La Mesa back on May 5th at 4 o'clock in the morning when he was shot in the head by a passing motorist and killed. The oldest of nine children, Zusha Brown, lived and worked on the Sequan Reservation. His mother, Deborah Flores, described her son as a very loving, very kind-hearted individual at a press conference in La Mesa. Daniel Tucker, the chairman of the Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation, said this shouldn't have happened. The tribe hopes that the increased reward will encourage witnesses to come forward. Police say that they believe witnesses may be reluctant to come forward for fear of safety, but that authorities will work to protect any witnesses who come forward. Lieutenant Matt Nicholas with La Mesa Police stated, "We know it was a gang-related incident, but we don't know the motivation or the reason behind it." Lieutenant Nicholas said that Brown was not a gang member and is not believed to have been the target. "We have reason to believe there were a number of vehicles," he added. Brown's mother vowed, "We will continue to fight until justice has been done."
This is Carrie Hyatt reporting for the East County Magazine and KNSJ. Summertime is here, and the county's Department of Animal Services wants to remind everyone that these hot days can pose a danger to your pets. "Animals can be very sensitive to high heat," said Don Danielson, director of Animal Services. "Here are some tips to keep your pet safe and comfortable during hot weather. Be sure your pet has shade all day. Remember, the sun's position changes during the day. Keep your pets indoors if the temperature is lower inside. Keep your pet's water supply in a tip-proof container, always topped off, and be sure it is cool. Pets will not drink water that is too hot. Consider a misting system to keep the outdoor areas cooler. A car can heat up very quickly on an 85-degree day. A car can reach 102 degrees in 10 minutes and soar upward to 120 degrees, even with the windows down an inch or two. So never leave your pet unattended in the car. If you exercise with your dog, do so only in the very early morning when the temperature is lower. Don't take dogs on extreme hikes in the heat, since many dogs have perished in hot weather on local trails. Don't take your dogs for walks on the hot pavement. If it is too hot for you to walk barefoot, then don't make your dogs do it either, since this can burn the pads of their feet. Consider adding a child's wading pool for your dog. Many dogs will keep cool by taking a dip. Following these tips can keep your pet safe and healthy. If you see a pet that is in immediate threat of death or injury, call the department's emergency number at 619-236-2341. For non-emergencies, call 619-767-2675.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing mystery and suspense author Terry Ambrose. My guest also writes three columns for Examiner.com, one about fiction in San Diego, another on crime fiction in the United States, and a third titled Crime and Courts. Welcome, Terry. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks, Raina. It's great to be here.
Let's start with your background. With a BA in anthropology and an MBA in business management, how did you end up writing fiction about skip tracers, con artists, and criminologists?
It actually goes back to when it was my first job that I got that kind of got me interested in this. I learned that on that job, it was with a finance company, I learned that people lie under almost, well, if they have the right set of circumstances,
right.
They will definitely lie to you.
Right.
And it was my first real experience with that. So that behavior has fascinated me ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I've learned more about how people communicate and how they, the things that they do when they lie. And so human motivation and that sort of thing has always been of interest to me. So when I started writing mysteries and suspense, that was what intrigued me.
And so do you always have an element of that in what you write?
Yes, I do. My books always have a con artist and an element of lying or a scam involved in there.
And have you read up on the psychology of lying in these characters that you have?
Actually, yes. And what I've also read about is called neuro-linguistic programming. It's the process of how people communicate. It's their eye movements, their facial movements, their breathing patterns. All of that can be read by somebody who really knows what they're doing. Good poker players know how to do that.
Right.
Liars who are really good at it, con men, they know how to read their mark, and they know how to read not necessarily what your thoughts are, but what your reaction is to what they have just said.
So your characters can be authentic.
Yes. And I have them on both sides of the fence, especially in License to Lie. I've got the con artist point of view as well as the criminologist point of view. So you get two sides of the same issue going on.
Oh, fun. So you've called your first novel a trunk novel, meaning that it's a book that should be tossed into a trunk or kept in an attic or basement. Can you tell us about how you evolved from that trunk novel, you know, your first attempt at the writing craft, to your current books and columns?
My first book was sort of a regurgitation of almost every bit of anger that I had running around in me at the time. So when I finished that and I started reading back through it, and I actually started getting critiques on it from a group that I was involved with, I learned it was really bad. It had bad dialogue. It had bad exposition. Everything about it was just terrible. But I had purged myself of all of that anger in the process of writing it. So I knew what I wanted to do was to learn more about the craft. So at that point, what I started doing was getting serious about the craft of writing and learning more about it. So 25 years later, I'm now what I would consider a pretty decent author. I'm getting a lot of 5-star reviews. So I think I pulled it off.
So would you recommend that first-time authors just sort of let go and just put it all out there and go through this process, or?
Yeah, in a sense, because the conventional wisdom is that you really don't get good until you've written about somewhere between 5 and 7 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually, I think Photo Finish was actually my 4th or 5th book. License to Lie was my 6th. And so I'm now working on books 7 and 8. And I'm feeling now like I have a much better understanding of the elements of a mystery, the elements of suspense, than I ever did 25 years ago when I thought I knew it, but really didn't.
Right. It's one of those careers you get better as you get older, right?
You definitely get better the more you do it.
Your suspense novel, License to Lie, it's about a con artist and a criminologist who join forces to solve a kidnapping. So in writing that book, what was it like for you to revisit this world where no one can be trusted? Did you re-experience it, or?
When I first started working on License to Lie, I wanted to learn the difference between the way that men look at things and women look at things. I had seen that in something that my wife and I were looking at opposite sides of the same question. It also became apparent that people who are on one side of the law look at it differently than people on the other side of the law. So I started putting that together and came up with this book where we have the con artist trying to accomplish one thing, the criminologist trying to accomplish the same thing, but they're coming at it from different viewpoints. And they might necessarily want the opposite thing, but they had to work together. So that was how I got involved with License to Lie. And it became one of those things that the more I worked on it, the more fun I had with it. And so I really enjoyed being able to look at the same question from 2 points of view that were directly opposed.
Being a psychologist for your characters.
Yeah, in a sense.
One last question, Terry. What book are you working on now, and when will it become available?
I'm working on a book called Kauai Temptations right now. It's the same protagonist that's in Photo Finish, which is a funny Hawaiian mystery, and it's set on the island of Kauai. That will be available sometime in September if all goes well.
Can you tell us a little bit what it's about?
It's about a former skip tracer whose identity is stolen when his checks are stolen. He goes to Kauai to find the person who's been passing the checks. He finds out that it's a young woman who's been impersonating him. And yeah, and she's pulled this off because she has a fake ID and she has his checks with just his first initial. He soon learns that she's been killed. He's got an identity theft ring leader after him, and he's now embroiled in another murder investigation.
Sounds interesting. Well, Terry, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Terry Ambrose, please visit his website at terryambrose.com or his author Facebook page. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Thanks, Raina.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
That's Greg Manis from Manis Vineyards here on East County Magazine Live. And we're going to introduce you to another very informative and what I feel is a very affluential person in the wine and vines industry movement. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Rutkoff. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here.
Give our listeners a little story of what your life's all about.
Okay. I'm originally from the East Coast and moved to California like many people did, seeking fame and fortune in the early 1980s. And I lived in San Diego for a while. Got a degree in finance from San Diego State University. I moved up to the San Francisco area and I got an MBA from San Francisco State University, and I worked for Bank of America for about 10 years doing budgets and financial analysis and risk management. I liked wine and I thought, you know, I'm here in the Bay Area. Napa's not that far away. So why don't I see if I can go to work in the wine industry?
Now, did you do some specialty schooling and training in viticulture and AVA? Or?
Yes, I was able to go back to school, and I took some of the seminars that they offer at UC Davis on sensory analysis and chemical composition of wine, and then I went to school in the classes at Napa Valley College. It owns 2 5-acre vineyards in the heart of Napa. We used to grow and sell grapes to Stagsleep wine cellars, and the school offers 3 different AA degrees and about 30 or 35 different courses in the wine industry. So it's a very extensive program.
So you got a lot of information and a lot of training out of that. You have started a new career down here and got some of the colleges kind of buzzing. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're teaching these college-level classes about vines and the wines movements and the new ordinances? And-
well, 2 years after moving here, I wanted to get a little bit more work under my belt, get more hours, and I thought, you know, San Diego looks like a pretty good place to grow, and it certainly is a place where people are drinking a lot of wine, and we have a big hospitality industry. So I called up my friend Steve, who runs the wine program at Napa College, and I asked him what he thought about the idea of taking some of the classes and transplanting them and using them down here, and he said it was an absolutely great idea. So I started sending emails and making phone calls to the four-year colleges, but especially all the community colleges, and the hospitality programs and the science programs and agriculture, any different department I could think of, if they wanted to start teaching wine classes. And here I was, I've got two college degrees plus college education on top of that, and teach the science of viticulture, how the plants grow, why they are what they are, how to harvest them, selling, the business side of wine. And after, it took a little while, but finally got Cuyamaca College. Cuyamaca had actually called Steve at Napa College 2 weeks before I did and asked him if he knew of anybody that could teach down here. So when I called Steve, not only did he say it's a good idea, but he said, hold on a minute, let me dig up this email or phone call or whatever, and he put me in touch with Cuyamaca, and I got in touch with them and put together a proposal. It took about 5 or 6 proposals to finally hit the right one, what the right match between what the continuing education program was all about, or what they needed from an instructor and what I could teach.
Right, and so you've taught a couple classes out there now. Your current program is about how to obtain boutique winery licensure and the bylaws and in-laws and legalization of all those different steps. Amazing stuff. What do you got planned for this upcoming fall? What's your next class?
We're going to teach 2 classes in the fall semester here at Cuyamaca. One is going to be Wines of the World. Grab your passport. We're not going to be tasting, unfortunately, but we will be teaching people how to look at a French wine label, a Spanish wine, you know, Italian wine, how to look at it, how to read the label, how to understand what it is and compare it to a California wine. And then the second half of the fall session, I'm going to teach the business class again that I'm finishing up right now. It's called Creating a Successful Winery Business.
Nice.
And this class touches on federal law, state and local law, the county ordinance for having a tasting room. It touches on sales and marketing, using the internet a little bit, and some accounting issues. So it's an all-around general purpose class, what's involved in being in the wine industry, what it takes to get started, and where to go.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Don Rutkoff. From all of us here at East County Magazine Live and Manus Vineyards, thanks for tuning in today. Don, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate the interview.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Manus, proprietor of the Manus Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manusvineyards.com.
An Amera Media production.
Starting next month, Californians will be able to sign up for health insurance in the state's new health exchange known as Covered California. Mark Beach with AARP California says there are a couple of online resources to help guide people through the process. The website healthlawfacts.org has useful information about the Affordable Care Act, and the website healthlawanswers.org is an interactive site that asks a handful of simple questions to produce a customized report.
It's really just 7 questions. Where do you live? What's your age range? Family status, etc. And based on these answers, the site provides guidance.
Beach says it's important to demystify the law for people of all ages.
Even if folks are 65 plus and on Medicare, they may have children, grandchildren, other relatives who will be affected by the new health care law.
The actual cost and details of the health plans won't be available until October 1st, but Beach says they hope people will take the time now to educate themselves so they can make the right decision. The Affordable Care Act requires that most people have insurance by January. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Miriam Raftery. This week, we're on the road in Hukumba Hot Springs, a town that is bubbling with activity. The town recently changed its name to take back its historic roots. The name Hukumba means healing waters and traces its roots back to the Kumeyaay Native American people who used to spend their winters by these natural hot springs. By the 1920s, Hakumba had become a mecca for Hollywood celebrities in the silent movie era. But then a fire burned down the historic hotel and bathhouse, and construction of Interstate 8 moved traffic away from old Highway 80 through the heart of this community. Hakumba almost became a ghost town, but now it is springing back to life thanks to the vision of the people here with us today. Dave Landman is a successful businessman who was actually asked by the townspeople to buy a rundown spa and resort and turn it once again into a destination to draw people to Hakumba Hot Springs. So he bought the promissory note for the Hakumba Hot Springs Resort, and he made a surprising discovery. Dave, tell us what else was in that note.
Well, it turns out that the promissory note was secured by 29 properties throughout the town. It included most of the downtown area, some residential sites, and a lot of vacant land.
So what was your reaction when you learned that you were the proud new owner of an entire town?
Well, it went from one project to 29 projects, so it was a little bit overwhelming at the time.
Now, the people of the town were confident that Dave could make this a success because he already owns another wildly successful business in Hakumba. Tell us about that, Dave.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, my wife and I bought a rundown RV park on the north side of Interstate 8, and we actually turned it into the eighth largest clothing optional resort in the United States, the Anza Springs Resort.
So what is so attractive about Hakumba to bring so many people there?
It's a number of things. Number one, it's just an hour away from San Diego. So, you know, we call that the daycation destination place where people can come out for the weekend or just for the day use and enjoy the facilities. There's also the climate is beautiful because we're above the clouds, and in the summertime especially, we're so much cooler than the valley. So we get a lot of people up there from the El Centro, Yuma, Palm Springs area.
Now, Dave has been hard at work remodeling the Hakumba Hot Springs Resort, adding a new restaurant and a Southwest decor. But there won't be any skinny dipping since the spa will not be clothing optional. You can find out more about their big opening season plans at the www.hakumbaresort.com. Now, Dave, what else are you planning in the area?
Nothing is finalized yet, but we've had a number of calls from people interested in renting some of the retail spaces. We've had some artists contact us because they know our desire to turn it into an art-type community. We're working on a number of things. You know, some of the things in the back of my head are maybe a winery. We've talked about a number of other things, but that one kind of comes to the head all the time.
Thank you very much, Dave. Danielle Cook is a driving force behind the Hakumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. In fact, she and her husband, Howard, helped recruit Dave to buy the Hot Springs Resort. Danielle, tell us about your vision for Hakumba Hot Springs.
My vision of Hakumba Hot Springs is similar to that of the Landmans. I envision the community as being another backcountry version, if you will, of Taos, New Mexico, a community where artists gather, where entrepreneurs want to come in and build businesses, where people want to come and chill out at the Hot Springs Spa and enjoy our special air, light, and ambiance.
You've started some websites where people can find out more about the hidden treasures in Hakumba Hot Springs and the surrounding areas.
Yes, we started a website about a year ago, www.gosandiegobackcountry.org, to give tourists an idea of some of the free things that they could do in the backcountry, in Boulevard and Hakumba, and also places where they could stay, places where they could eat. We even have a section that tells people of different hikes they can go on, and gives them an idea of a road trip that they can take with their family.
And you also have another website devoted just to Hakumba, and that site is hakumba.org.
Yes.
Now, there is also a lake, Lake Hakumba, which had gone virtually dry, and now I understand it's being restored.
Hakumba Lake now is for a virtual birder's paradise. The lake is filling up naturally. We have nesting tricolors, which are a bird of special interest, according to the Audubon. We have birders there every weekend, and this has brought in business for Hakumba Lounge and will bring in business for the spa. In addition, some of the residents of Hakumba have taken it upon themselves to clear brush and have built trails, so you can now walk almost entirely around the lake.
Wow, that's great. Now, the Hakumba Lounge is a new Wi-Fi cafe and coffee house that opened up recently. Plus, as you mentioned, the Hakumba Hikers and Walkers is another new group that's formed, and they're leading people on treks all over through the scenic mountains, deserts, and historic sites in this region. Hakumba also has an arts council, and recently they revived another town tradition, the Hakumba Blues Festival.
Enigmatic love, a love like no other. In the summer sun, I strolled the shore. The sand warmed my feet, the waves soothed my heart within a glowing light.
I'm here today with Joe Marshall, a talented blues musician who is the powerhouse behind the festival. Joe, tell me how long you've been playing the blues.
Well, I've been playing the blues for about 45 years, and I got interested in the blues. Some friends of mine started turning me on to it. At the time, I was interested in most rock and roll, I guess about anybody my age would have been. And I found that the blues suited more of my music because I primarily play the harmonica. I love the blues because it's for everybody. It's from the working man to the white collar.
This is the second annual Hukumba Blues Festival. What makes this such a special event for the local musicians?
It's a great event for the local musicians. They get to network. They get to meet a lot of other musicians from all over. We had musicians from San Diego. We had musicians from Imperial Valley. We had musicians from the Midwest. We had musicians from Northern California. And so it made it very special, primarily because of that, and secondly because it gave all these people a chance to reunite.
So it's one big jam session out there.
One big family, one big jam session, yes.
We're going to end today by playing a little riff here from Mama Christie, who is one of the talented musicians that you could hear out at the Hukumba Blues Festival. And you can find her music at www.mamachristie.com. This song is called Drip, and it was written after the 9/11 attacks, and it's all about the healing power of love. And here in the town of Healing Waters, Hukumba Hot Springs, it seems especially fitting. You can find out more about Hukumba Hot Springs at www.eastcountymagazine.org, and be sure to tune in for future editions of On the Road in East County. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.